Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Chief Justice Roberts, President Carter, President Clinton, President Bush, President Obama, fellow Americans, and people of the world, thank you.
It was the day so many Muslim Americans hoped, even prayed, they would never see.
Together, we will determine the course of America and the world for many, many years to come.
The man who for 2 years built a campaign on banning them from the country, registering their families and monitoring their places of worship, was now their president.
We will reinforce old alliances and form new ones and unite the civilized world against radical Islamic terrorism, which we will eradicate completely from the face of the earth.
He didn't waste a second. Within the first 2 weeks of office, Trump had signed 10 executive orders, including greenlighting the infamous wall on the Mexico border, putting his far-right chief strategist, Steve Bannon, on the National Security Council, and of course, banning all travelers and refugees from 7 Muslim countries, or at least he tried.
Together, we will make America strong again. We will make America wealthy again. We will make America proud again. We will make America safe again. And yes, together, we will make America great again. Thank you, God bless you, and God bless America.
But nearly 4 months after the election, America remains bitterly divided.
All right, welcome back, everyone, and thanks for staying with us. It is the top of the hour, and we want to take you to D.C. We have been monitoring the Women's March coming out of Washington and across the entire
Millions
world.
Millions took to the streets Saturday, one day after the inauguration of Donald Trump.
I stand here before you, unapologetically Muslim American.
Now, we can whimper or we can fight back. Me, I'm here to fight back.
President Agent Orange, what up, what up? For perpetuating all of the evil that you've been perpetuating.
I will not respect administration that won an election on the backs of Muslims.
Details in right now. Donald Trump about to keep a major campaign promise and sign some executive orders restricting refugees, banning visas from 7 majority Muslim
Jubilant
countries.
Crowds danced and chanted in the streets of Brooklyn after a U.S. federal judge decreed an emergency halt.
A federal appeals court in San Francisco has just upheld the suspension.
We just got a tweet from the president. See you in court. The security of our nation is at stake.
I'm Muhammad Hassan, and this is Public Enemy. In episode 1 of this series, we met Muslims in America anxious and uncertain. They described growing up in a climate of hostility ever since 9/11. 15 years on, in the glare of a heated presidential campaign, they were beginning to feel the same fear for their safety in public, for their rights, and their future. We decided to check back in.
The last couple of weeks have been unbelievable. It's the word I keep returning to. It feels very surreal and very urgent and dire.
This is Adina Lekovich from the Muslim Public Affairs Council.
While we knew what this administration was capable of, because they told us all along the campaign trail, the fact that they moved at such a fast speed was surprising. Fortunately, the response by legal organizations like the ACLU and by everyday people rushing to airports, going on social media, being on as many public places as we can imagine, pushing back against this, and the judiciary now also pushing back against this Muslim ban disguised as selective countries. That's also been astounding. You know, when we last talked, I told you about a word that we made up in my house called crisertunity, the idea that there's an opportunity in every crisis. And I am astounded and also energized by the way that people have met this moment with like an astounding amount of compassion.
It does feel like a crisis right now to you guys?
Oh, God, yeah. This is a crisis of the highest order. I mean, we're watching our very democracy and our constitution being threatened right now. And, you know, if it was just Donald Trump, that would be one thing. But Steve Bannon, now Attorney General Jeff Sessions, the people who are involved in the decision-making for our country are people who fundamentally, I hate to say it, but I don't think that they fully believe in the humanity of Muslims.
At the time we recorded this episode, the travel ban, or extreme vetting as the White House calls it, has been stalled by a federal judge, who is backed up by the Court of Appeals. It may go all the way to the Supreme Court, or the president may issue a modified ban, but for the families caught up in the middle of it, there's no way of knowing what will happen next.
I mean, it's an emotional roller coaster for families right now who are separated because of the travel ban. I mean, we're at right now where we stand is that the ban has been sort of frozen temporarily. And so there's a huge rush for people to get here before that gets lifted, because it is certainly, you know, it's all bets are off. It's uncertain whether they will be able to come back. And I know personally firsthand people who have family overseas and are making some, you know, difficult decisions. I mean, people come here to build a new life and escape violence and instability. And the fact that them coming to the United States right now could also represent violence and instability, not in that order, hopefully, it puts them in a catch-22 of sorts.
Right, because they're sort of stuck between the place that they need to leave and the place that they're trying to come
right.
to.
Right, and again, we have legal organizations and individual lawyers who have rushed to airports to provide free legal counsel. That is so astounding and exactly what we need right now. And organizations like the ACLU and others that are filing the bigger lawsuits, that is a saving grace right now. And so on the local level, when it comes to mosques or individual Muslim families, I know that there are many places that are hosting Know Your Rights trainings or workshops. Our community of Muslims is about 3.5 million in the U.S. About 2/3 of them are immigrant in origin. Of those, you know, I don't know how many people actually come from those 7 countries, but there are lasting effects. And we know that something like 100,000 people are potentially impacted by this travel ban. So while it's a huge issue, it's also a micro-level issue where it's heartbreaking.
In his first interview as president, Donald Trump was asked whether the ban would fuel anger in the Muslim world towards America.
There's plenty of anger right now. How can you have more?
You don't think it'll exacerbate the problem?
David, I mean, I know you're a sophisticated guy. The world is a mess. The world is as angry as it gets. Well, you think this is going to cause a little more anger? The world is an angry place.
This is not the America that I know. This is not the America that my parents moved to for religious freedom, for a better way of life, for an education for their children. That face does not represent our face as Americans of all different stripes. Most Americans recognize that we're a country made of immigrants and made great by immigrants, not just in the past, but today. And so to have our elected leader projecting a dark and angry vision of the world is out of sync with how most Americans feel about it. Obama's America offered the opportunity for us to see ourselves as regular mainstream America. And the fact that so many people are awakened right now is a good thing. And that we have to stay, you know, as some people say, we have to stay woke, right? But we have been awakened, and we have to do everything in our power to reclaim America for the beautiful, multicultural, diverse fabric that it is.
The day after Donald Trump was voted in, millions took to the streets to protest in what's been called the largest march in U.S. history. Following the announcement of the travel ban, protesters and volunteer lawyers occupied airport terminals across the country, demanding the policy be scrapped. One of them was Nadine Ibrahim.
We did an emergency protest at Denver International Airport. Because it is considered private property, we didn't have a permit, and so there was an attempt to kind of stop that. But I think given the fact that they saw 1,000 people showed up, that we prayed Maghrib there, that we were not leaving, that we were just simply standing there holding signs and just making a really strong physical statement, they ended up letting us stay there. And the city mayor ended up giving us what you can say kind of like an emergency permit around that. And we also had a plethora of immigration lawyers that continued to volunteer their time to be there at the gates assisting people as they continue to be questioned. In our communities, we sent out mass information around, if you're stopped, these are your rights, be sure to verbally state them, and this is what you can ask for around this. So, we had that emergency protest, and it was really great to see that and to really kind of send that message of solidarity. And the message of, we refuse to accept that executive order. And it was huge when the federal judge granted a stay on that executive order. And we continue to wait and see what is going to be the judicial system's response to this executive order and whether or not it will continue to uphold or whether it will be altered or whether it will be removed.
What did it feel like for you to be there and pray in an airport terminal, where notoriously it's a place where a lot of Muslims do feel uncomfortable and do feel like they're not welcome?
It was beautiful. A lot of our allies donated their jackets for us to pray on them. The police tried to tell us that we need to go to the interfaith center to go pray, that we couldn't pray publicly there, but we still prayed there. And it was really great to be there along with my sisters and to pray. I think that was one of the most beautiful, relaxed prayers I've ever had, because our allies were witnessing us praying, and a lot of them interlocked arms, creating a fence of solidarity around us to make sure nobody came in and disrupted our prayer time. So it was really beautiful to see that, and I felt very relaxed and I felt protected within that space.
For community organizers like Nadine, it's day in and day out. She's there speaking at rallies on campus, in public places, at mosques, to senators, the mayor. Her phone is constantly buzzing with desperate calls from students wanting to find out what's going to happen to them and their loved ones. She started a buddy system with her female Muslim friends to make sure no one's going out alone at night in case they're attacked.
It's been very exhausting. It's been very emotionally draining. I would be lying too if I didn't have, and saying that I didn't have any meltdowns in the last few months. I don't think I've had my mental health be so compromised ever in my life as it is in this time period since the election. Actually, since the inauguration more than anything else.
Right.
It's been really difficult, but we refuse to back down, because to me and to a lot of the people that I work with, silence is a form of acceptance. And we refuse to be silent around this. And we demand that the Constitution be upheld to the extent that it's supposed to be upheld. And we refuse to accept any type of executive orders that are ultimately discriminating against people on the basis of them being, in the words of the Trump administration, implemented to protect our national security.
So you guys, it's fight or flight right now, isn't it?
It really is. It really is. It's so hard. It's so hard to keep pushing for this. It's like, it's crazy to think how much we have to fight for justice and enforcement of civil rights to be upheld. I mean, we saw it literally after the day of inauguration, the civil rights page was removed from the White House page. LGBTQ rights page was removed from the civil rights page. And it just, it's just crazy.
Trump's policies have already sent ripples across the world. The Canadian man who shot up a mosque in Quebec last month, killing 6 Muslims, cited Donald Trump as a main influence. In Europe, upcoming elections could see pro-Trump and anti-Muslim candidates as heads of state in France and the Netherlands. A bill currently before the Australian Senate would give the current immigration minister, Peter Dutton, the power to revalidate visas of, and I quote, specified class of persons, and halt immigration from certain countries if it's in the public interest. To put things in context, this is what he had to say in November about Lebanese Muslim migrants.
If we're talking about a significant number of people within that community who are doing the wrong thing, then clearly mistakes have been made in the past. And the reality is that Malcolm Fraser did make mistakes in bringing some people in the 1970s, and we're seeing that today, and we need to be honest in having that discussion.
The former immigration minister, now treasurer, Scott Morrison, said Trump's travel ban was proof the world was catching up to Australia's approach on border security. So how do Australian Muslims feel about that?
I mean, how do I feel about it? I'm not surprised, to be honest. The warning signs have been there for a long time, and people have been arguing this point, including myself, for a long time, that we're heading down this path.
This is Muhammad Taba, a researcher at Melbourne University. We spoke to him in episode 2 about Australia's counter-terror policies and the rise of far-right parties like Pauline Hanson's One Nation.
I do agree that America, in some parts, followed Australia's lead. So I do agree with the Treasurer on that. You know, Australia sort of led the way in terms of immigration policy. Obviously, America's gone a little bit further down that track and, you know, been a little bit more explicit in their language. I mean, it is what it is. It's pretty bad. We all know that. What I usually like to focus on is, from our end as a Muslim community, what have we done to prevent this, perhaps to pave its way, and also in the current times, what are we doing to resist it? To give an example, one of the common responses we've had towards Islamophobia and racism from many Muslim leaders across the West is, for example, it's coming out now in the US. You know, this isn't the America that we know. This is un-American, or in our context, this is un-Australian. I think that sort of language and that approach is unhelpful in that it misses the fact that actually this is very American. It's very Australian. These are not aberrations. These are policies that have been entrenched over very long periods of time. And this is, I would argue, the inevitable result. So I do think there was a little bit of what can we call it? I guess hopeful. I would call it naivety, to be perfectly blunt. I guess some people would call it hopeful optimism or something of that sort. But I do think that really stifled a lot of, you know, what could have been meaningful resistance to these sorts of policies.
So what kind of resistance do you think the Muslim community needs to be undertaking?
Look, it's hard to say. Obviously, it's all speculation. And it's much easier, you know, acknowledge to critique what's currently happening. One obvious one is, you know, what's currently taking place across parts of the U.S. Allying with other groups. This is something I think that's long overdue, something, you know, a bit of a missed opportunity, if you will. Many other groups have been through similar scenarios. They've worked out tactics, you know, plans, what works, what doesn't. You know, they've also formed networks, increased their resources and so on. That's something that we, you know, really lack in the Australian context.
It's those networks the Muslim community might need sooner than they thought. In order to retain its place in government, Australia's leading Liberal Party struck a deal last week with One Nation. You know, the guys that want to ban Muslims and shut down mosques. To support each other's candidates ahead of the upcoming state election in West Australia. And with the immigration bill worming its way through Parliament, it seems all but inevitable a travel ban is on its way.
Absolutely. I mean, it's there in the bill. It's simply a matter of whether it gets passed or not. I do think, I mean, we've got it in writing very similar to the US policy. I don't see why it wouldn't go through, to be perfectly honest. Either, you know, perhaps watered down a little bit, but I don't see why a policy like that wouldn't go through either now or sometime in the near future.
And what will it mean for the Muslim community in Australia?
I mean, essentially, it would just increase the pressure. I don't want to pretend that it's going to, you know, I think for most of us, it's not going to be a big shock, you know, oh, we were living comfortably and then this ban came in. I think it will just, you know, turn up a few notches of the pressure that we've been facing for the past couple of decades. It will be very interesting to see what happens to people with dual citizenship, people travelling in and out of the country for various reasons, and also just, I guess, relatives visiting and so on. I mean, these are really uncertain times. It is frightening, but I don't think it's surprising. Look, perhaps this is just the way that we're dealing with it, is to, you know, accept that it's here and, you know, that sort of a ban or proposal should be, you know, instigating really widespread panic, and I don't feel that it is that much, and I suspect that's just because we've gotten used to so much pressure and so much. I mean, we mentioned in the last episode that, you know, week after week we're just constantly facing new issues. So I think we've become accustomed to that a little bit, which is a bit frightening.
The effects of Trump's election have been far-reaching and swift, and it seems anti-Muslim sentiment is fast becoming a new norm. But what's also true is that more people are speaking out against Islamophobia now than ever before, in America, Australia, and New Zealand. On a crisp Tuesday evening in Auckland, hundreds of people gathered in Aotea Square to do the same.
You see, my parents at least had the courage to take this leap of faith and strive for something greater.
Ahmed Bashir spoke at the rally about his parents who migrated from Sudan to make home in New Zealand. Because they're citizens here, it means they're exempt from Trump's ban. But Ahmed says his cousins are right in the midst of it.
My family members can't leave. Like, my cousins can't leave the country now. Even though they live in the U.S., they can't leave the U.S. Even, you know, for even a year back to Sudan, just out of fear that they won't be let back in. And I think that in itself is frightening.
What are they going through right now?
I think confusion. Everyone's trying to find hope in what's happening. But it's hard. But, you know, I think that's what a lot of people are just trying to do. Like my cousins, I know for fact that they're just trying to find something. They're trying to find solidarity with the rest of the communities, right? And I think that gets them by, and that gets a lot of people by from losing, you know, their sanity, I guess.
But people in New Zealand shouldn't pat themselves on the back, he says. This could happen here too.
So New Zealand, people have this perception. Personally, like, people have this perception that New Zealand has always had a very open refugee kind of thing, but it really hasn't. The reasons that, for example, the Jewish community is very small here is because New Zealand, after World War II, had a very strict, you know, refugee policy. Right? I think it was OECD report where it showed that New Zealand took one of the least amounts of refugees in comparison to other. Even Australia, it took more refugees compared to their capabilities. So New Zealand is not actually in a great state. People are just have this perception that it is, which is even more dangerous than actually being aware of it.
During the rally, three Trump supporters arrived and started shouting pretty horrible anti-Muslim stuff, trying to disrupt the speeches. Then, these guys turned up. They're called Strangers in a Strange Band. Great name, I know. And they've been turning up the protests to boost morale and to shut down trolls. They surrounded the Trump supporters and drowned them out with, well, trumpets. This episode of Public Enemy was produced by me, Mohammed Hassan, for RNZ. Our executive producer is Tim Watkin, and our engineer is Leon Nguyen. You can check out the first three episodes, as well as all our other podcasts online, on iTunes, and on Spotify. If you like what you heard, please rate us on iTunes and tell your friends.
Hey folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF Podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.